Greetings to each of you in Jesus' name tonight. Count it a privilege to be here. I do apologize for getting here late. Thankfully, I have my notes along last minute. Went to print them, and I could have brought a previous copy, but wasn't quite comfortable with that. So anyway, had to run out of the way to find a printer that worked. You know, if you ignore the low toner sign long enough, eventually it will not work. And I didn't realize that I had used it that long, but I'm not sure who all else uses it. So anyway, greet you in Jesus' name and blessed to be here. I invite you for a message to the Old Testament, one of the minor prophets. I invite you to Micah. Is it okay to go to the Old Testament for a council sermon? It certainly hasn't been the first council sermon from the Old Testament. And Romans 15 tells us, for whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. And so I believe that it is okay, even on a council sermon, to preach from the Old Testament. Even though we're not in the Old Testament, and I thank God for that tonight. Micah. How much do we know about Micah? Well, probably many of us studied him in school and forgot a lot of things about him. But it is interesting to just mention his name. Micah's name means, who is like Jehovah? Who is like Jehovah? That's a challenge. Who is like God? That question could tell us several things. That's not the title of the message, but it is something to think about. Here in Micah chapter 6, he is calling Israel to testify before the mountains. The hills and the foundations were going to be a judge, the case between them and the Lord. And we're going to read Micah 6, 1 to 8. Hear ye now what the Lord saith, arise, contend thou before the mountains, and let the hills hear thy voice. Hear ye, O mountains, the Lord's controversy, ye strong foundations of the earth. For the Lord hath a controversy with his people, and he will plead with Israel. O my people, what have I done unto thee, and wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me. For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, and redeemed thee out of the house of servants. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, consulted, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him from Shittim unto Gilgal, that ye may know the righteousness of the Lord. And then this is Micah responding for the people, if I understand it right, the people's response. Wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Seems like they had a penitent spirit. Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams or 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He hath shown thee, O man, what is good. And what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God? Which verse was familiar? Of course, verse 8. It's a verse that we all know. It's a verse that we have memorized by heart. I would like to think particularly about verse 8. The title of the message tonight is, What Doth the Lord Require of Me? What doth the Lord require of me? Tonight, there's only one thing that matters. I don't know what all you've been thinking about today that was really, really important. Too often we think that the little picture is the most important, the thing that's right in front of me. All of a sudden tonight, it was of utmost importance to revive that printer. And any amount of shaking it around didn't seem to help it. Oh, can't we get just a little bit more toner out of this thing? But oftentimes the little thing right in front of me is not the most important thing. What is the most important question that we should be asking ourselves? I believe we could phrase it a couple different ways. What doth the Lord require of me? What does God think of my life? I think those are all things, maybe different ways to say the same thing. Is God getting what he wants out of my life? Here, God was complaining about his people. He had done great things for them. He brought them up out of the land of Egypt. He delivered them from bondage. He could have let them die in the wilderness, but he guided them. He not only guided, he provided. And after all that, they did not appreciate him the way they should have. By what right does God ask this question? There are many people that say, why do I owe God anything? Who is he that I should obey him? Who is he that I should give him any honor? I'm just reminded again of the verse in Mark 12 where the people were complaining about Caesar and they didn't want to pay their taxes. Sometimes we complain as well, but if you take a penny, whose inscription is on it? Jesus said, it had the head of Caesar. So render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar. Tonight, each of us are created in whose image? We're created in the image of God. Why? Because God created us. And so we must all together render unto God the things that are God's. Every human being should come to the awareness that I am created in the image of God and I owe my life to him. What doth the Lord require of me? What is it? It says here, he hath shown thee, O man, what is good. I'd just like to mention two truths. One is that God has the authority to define what is good. Are you ready to allow God to define what is good and what is evil in your life? And he defines that to us in many different ways. One of the ways, of course, is his word. The other is the authority of the church, the authority of the government, our parents. There's many different aspects. But God defines what is good in my life. Also, right along with that, God has the authority. Another truth is God has the authority to call us into account. To call us into account. Tonight, am I okay with that? Have I been living with that recognition? I trust you have. I trust that's why you're here tonight, because you're interested in answering those questions. What does the Lord require of us? I'd like to look at three different areas. First of all, to do justly. To do justly. What does it mean to do justly? Several different thoughts as I read the commentaries and different people's ideas. But if you look at the words to do justly, to do properly, to judge proper judgment. Haley said this means to act toward God and man according to the divine standard of righteousness revealed in his law. Another one, Adam Clark, he said to give to all their due. To give to all their due. And then he went on to mention the people who we owe in life. Who all do you owe in life? And what do you owe them? First of all, he mentioned God. To give God his due. What do we owe God? We must serve him with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength. We also owe him our body. Everything that he gave to us, we know we owe back to him. Are we doing that? Are we giving him what we owe him? I think that's a question for us. Are we giving God his due and his rights? God has given each of us our gifts and abilities. Have we given our gifts and abilities back to him? He's given us our time. Are we giving our time back to him? He's given us a tongue. Do we use our tongue for him? He's given us our possessions, the many different things that we have. Are we willing to give them back to God? Or have I kept any part of my life for myself? Or given any part to the devil? I think we know there's a lot of things that Satan wants to influence in our life, and we can do in direct obedience to his bidding. Are we doing that with what we have? Or are we giving it to God? He also mentioned our neighbors. Giving thy neighbor his due, to do to him as thou wouldst that he should do to thee, never working ill to him. Just reading it directly from Adam Clark. And then he also mentions ourselves. Thou art to give to thyself thy due, not to deprive thy soul of what God has provided for it, to keep thy body in temperance, sobriety, chastity, avoiding all excesses, both in action and passion. But finally, the question comes back to this thing to do justly. Have I directed my choices, all the choices of my life, have I directed them by godly principles that led me into the paths of righteousness? There are two powers. One is guided by that which is just and righteous and holy, and another power that guides us into that which is unjust, unrighteous, unholy. Have I been making right choices to do justly? To do justly, we think of doing as action, choosing that which is right. I talked to a young man last week, and he told me that he's been asking foolish questions which led him to wrong answers. His wrong answers for life led him into wrong answers, led him into bad choices, bad habits in his life. It has just spiraled down out of control, and he recognizes that. Why? Because he was asking the wrong questions. I think the question we could ask the wrong question like, God, do you really have this authority over me? Or what right do you have? Or we could in humility say, what does God require of me? And as he was thinking about what God wanted out of his life, he was able to make right choices. So let's ask the right questions. So we find the right answers to make the right choices to do what's right. Secondly, here, we have the thought, what doth the Lord require of thee? To love mercy. To love mercy. Why is mercy important? Did you think about that? Why is mercy important to you tonight? Is mercy important at all? I believe that mercy is important because God is a God of mercy. Why is God a God of mercy? You know, there's a lot of things that I don't understand, especially as you think about God's justice. You think about the justice and righteousness and holiness of God, and then you contrast that with the justice, especially versus the mercy. Thinking of the justice, Ezekiel 18:4 says, behold, all souls are mine. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Thinking of justice, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. And I can't explain how the justice of God and the mercy of God work together. I don't understand all that. I can't explain the heart of God. I can't explain why he is who he is. But tonight I know that he is who he is, and he is who he said he is. And I believe that one of the reasons why he has mercy, and one of the things that we can understand about his mercy, is that he has mercy to show us his love and his desire for a relationship with us. That's the reason he has mercy. As humans, we are the recipients of the mercies of God to enter into a relationship with him. Do we love mercy for what it does for us? Loving mercy for what it does for us to be able to enter into a relationship with God. It is something that the angels do not understand. I believe tonight that they cannot relate to the mercy of God like we can. They were given justice according to their choice. You know, they chose either to follow Lucifer or to follow God. And as a result of that choice, they're bound for an eternal destiny. And they don't have any further choice, from my understanding. Man fell. He was headed for hell as well. But God showed mercy. Why? I don't know. I don't understand all that. But God chose it that way. God chose to give the angels a choice. And after that, their fate was sealed. I don't believe that he showed mercy on the angels the way he has to mankind. And I love the fact tonight that we can be in that mercy. That even though we were fallen, now we can be redeemed. A requirement to please God is to love mercy. How does that apply to my life? Well, I think it has a lot to do with appreciating our relationship with God, first of all, as we mentioned. But I believe that it also has a lot to do in my relationship to my fellow men. In regards to my fellow brother or sister tonight, do I love mercy? What does that mean? I believe tonight, as I mentioned, God is a God of first, second, third chances. What do I extend to my brother? Do I allow him a second chance, a third chance, a fourth? Are we willing to forgive and have mercy? You know, we can be very quick to become exasperated. That people are just set in their ways, there's no hope for them, and give up way too quickly. God calls us to love mercy, giving people many chances in our relationships. It becomes practical. You know, people, they can understand very well where the line is, but that sometimes just doesn't stop them from crossing it one more time. We need the love, mercy, and patience of God to relate to and to redeem our human relationships. I'm convinced of that. Whether it's in the home, in the marriage, husband to wife, wife to husband, father to son, mother to daughter, in the workplace, in the church, in the school, out on the street. You know, I believe tonight that we as Christians should be the most compassionate and merciful people to those in any kind of need. Do we have a heart of compassion, or do we pass by on the other side? Whether it's somebody stranded on the road or somebody that's all caught up in some emotional distress. Or maybe it's somebody who's struggling spiritually. Do we have time to listen to their problem, to consider their need, and then to give them a way out? Another aspect of mercy is, do I hold others to a higher standard than of myself? That's one that I think we all are challenged with. Or am I holding grudges from the past, things I just won't let go? I think these are all evidences of the fact that maybe I don't love mercy the way that I should. Let's remember that, what doth the Lord require of me? To love mercy. Lastly, what is the third requirement? It is to walk humbly with thy God. Why does he use the word walk? (Clears throat) I believe that he uses the word walk because it's a part of normal life, just to walk. I think God wants to be a part of our normal living from day to day. Did I take God with me today as I went about my duties? Or did I go on my own? I believe he also uses that. Because as we think about walking, as I said, it's something we do every day. It's not a religious pretense. It's not something that we just put on Sunday, but it's the real thing. Part of the daily shoe leather. Walk. What else? What other word is there? Humbly. Humbly, not thinking more of ourselves than we ought to think. Humbly, also, why? Because we need to see God in all his greatness and live our lives in worship and adoration of who he is. I think that's a key to successfully navigating the difficulties of life, is to understand how big God is and how he cares for us. It's just an aspect of humility to understand that. Another aspect of humility is one that is listening for God's input. You know, if we're humble, we'll want to learn, we'll want to grow. I think it was yesterday. There was a young man who came asking for my help. He needed help with something that he wanted to get done. And as I asked him about the goals and what he wanted out of this, I challenged the decision that he was making, and I said, I don't think what you're going after is something that you really want. I don't think you need to get that thing. I don't think you need to go there. And he told me quite frankly that, well, I've already made up my mind that I'm going to get this thing. I'm going to do this thing. And he really didn't want my evaluation of his choices. He didn't want me to help him find the way. He had already decided. And that's not so important if it's just me. But what about God? What if God says, you know, son, that's in your dreams, but I happen to know that your dreams, when they come to fulfillment, that'll be a nightmare. It's not just a good dream, it's a nightmare. Do we push through them anyway, set on what I think has to be a reality for me? No, humbly is one that values God's input, not only listens to, but values. Values it enough to change our ways, to let some dreams die. I suppose most of you are old enough that you've let a few dreams die. Probably some big dreams that you really wanted to see happen in your life. A purchase you wanted to make, a place you wanted to go, and then you couldn't do it. You had to let it go. I think that's just the way of walking with God in humility, to accept that, to change our direction to accommodate his direction. Maybe it wasn't to purchase the thing we wanted, but rather to give for something that God wanted. To say no to myself. And so humility is most comfortable in surrender. Humility is most comfortable in surrender. You know, there's many people, and I believe it's just a part of our own human nature, that as we give up, as we let things out of our control, there's a terror that goes along with that. If we can't trust who's in control. And if we don't have a relationship with God, if we don't believe in God, then it's a terrible thing to be out of control. But if in humility we come to God and we recognize him as being in control and over everything and not out of control, as we surrender to him, there's a comfort in that. There's a peace in that. Surrender. Giving up to God. And I'm out of control so that he can be in control. I believe tonight that that is the place of humility. And the comfort is found as we give our lives in surrender. Yes, surrender is hard. Surrender is not easy. Moving on from humility with God. Tonight I'm thankful that God is interested in a relationship with us. And we can walk with him. We don't have to go alone. There are so many things that are too big for us by ourselves, but with God, all things are possible. We can make it through the difficulties of life if God is there to guide us, to walk humbly with God. I don't know if you noticed, and I don't think I brought out the things that they thought that they could do instead. If you look back in this chapter, what should we bring to God? Verse 6, should we come to God with an offering? Verse 7, would the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams? Or with 10,000 rivers of oil? I don't know how you would even create 10,000 rivers of oil. They went from the logical to something that was totally way beyond what they could do. Or then they even gave the option of something that was totally out of godliness, something that the heathen did. It said, shall I give my firstborn for my transgression? Offering up our children, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul. That's what the heathen did. What were they after? Well, I think they wanted by all means to please God. And there's a difference tonight between doing what it takes to simply appease his anger. God, I just want you to look the other way. I just don't want to feel your anger. I want to do just what it takes, just enough to get by. Or I want to do all it takes to please you.